Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year. That's just $50 total at monarch.com with code BUDGET. That's monarch.com, promo code BUDGET.
I hope you're strapped in. I hope you're ready to go. The new championship season is firmly upon us. Happy new season, everybody. Or happy nearly new season. We've got a few more days to go as of yet until Norwich City kickstart at Carrow Road against Hull. But the excitement is palpable. That new season excitement that everyone seems to feel, regardless of how a team has maybe ended a campaign when it comes to Norwich, or maybe they've gotten on more generally. We're going to try and use our wisdom or lack of to make some predictions ahead of the championship campaign. We're obviously going to speak about Norwich City's prospects as well, with it being on the horizon. And we're also going to have a little dissection of pre-season as well, which ended at the weekend against Carrow Road, a 2-0 win over Olympiacos. But because we wanted to do a bit more of a preview-y type pod, we don't get to do too many of those throughout the season, to be completely honest. We didn't record straight after Carrow Road, so we'll talk a little bit about that. I'm your host, Connor Southwell, joined by Sam Seaman and Paddy Davitt. The show coming to you as ever on Future Radio. And it's going to be an interesting hour or so. We thank you very much for putting us in your ears, regardless of how you're doing that, whether that be on YouTube, as an increasing number of you are, and you're watching our faces, or whether it's the old-fashioned way of through the headphones. We appreciate you joining us for this chat. Boys, let's just sort of read the room and gauge the temperature before we start. Just very quickly, I'm gonna go to each of you and just ask you the simple question. How excited are you for the start of the new campaign? Sam, you're directly to my right as I look at the screen. So you go first. How excited are you feeling?
I'm quite excited, actually. I think it's just going back to games and sort of being at matches that matter. And obviously we've done a few pre-season games and there's been a lot of football to watch, but there hasn't really been that competitive buzz, especially considering how Norwich ended the season and how alarmingly that tailed off. It feels like a long while since Norwich actually had a decent amount to play for and their fans are actually excited for games. So I'm actually really just looking forward to being back in that sort of competitive environment and watching a game of football under those conditions. I wouldn't say I'm absolutely buzzing. It's not the most excited I've ever been for the start of a season, but I think if you're a football fan and you've liked football for a long time, it's very difficult to get to the start of the season and not feel at least a little bit of excitement.
Paddy, I'll throw it over to you. How excited, you're a man who does excitement very well. How excited are you for the new season?
Yeah. When the minute you use the word excited, I had a flashback to one of them vlogs, which apparently now has been taken and out of context turn or whatever, and I'm now a hater of mornings.
Out of context, Davitt. There's a Twitter account.
There's enough of me on social media as it is, but I'd say I'm excited to see an end to the infernal amount of predictions forecasting everything from about 4th to 18th if you're Norwich. I've had my fill of them. Obviously, we're guilty of that. I'm sure we'll be coming out with some predictions on probably this pod. There's a supplement going to hit the shelves in a few days ahead of the whole game. So, you know, I can't extract me from that. But it just seems endless. Every outlet wants to rank where the championship looks like, and whether it's because I've been doing it far too many seasons or whether I'm just not very good at predicting things. But I just think it's a complete waste of time. Who would, in the last two or three seasons, have had Huddersfield going to the playoff final, Luton going to it once and then returning there, Coventry, even my team? You know, it's so many imponderables and intangibles at this stage. And that applies to Norwich, but it equally applies to the other 23 teams, or 22 teams, sorry. So it's a bit of a fool's game, really, to try and assess where we're at generally with the championship, or specifically with Norwich. But that said, you know, and it isn't about results in pre-season, but, you know, to do what they've done result-wise, but more so some of the facets of the performances, it feels like they have turned a page. But you know, the acid tests begin on Saturday with Hull City, and you know, to not continue on in the same vein, particularly at Carrow, where it's massively important they get off to a positive start for the mood music around the place, really, as much as points on the board. But if they don't get off to a good start, then for me, kind of those underlying frustrations, which will clearly burst to the surface, you know, towards the end of last season and vented in the direction of individuals, notably Stuart Webber, they're there. They're still under the surface. And I don't think, albeit a positive pre-season, is necessarily going to mask those feelings of dissatisfaction with the direction of travel. So, you know, we have to be realistic and say, yes, it's been a good pre-season. David Wagner felt it was a good pre-season in terms of what he was aiming to get out of it, whether that's transfer-wise or just refreshing kind of the outlook in terms of the strategy, what they're going to try and do with and without the ball. But all of that for me is probably you can accept that, but it won't count for a great deal if 4:45 or 5:00 this Saturday at Carr Road and they've got beat, because then I think you'll start to see again those fault lines not burst forth, because I think it's far too early for that. But you know, you'd be naive to think that if they don't get off to a good start, that the frustration will be there right again as it was towards the end of last season.
Yes, absolutely, and that fast start feels absolutely crucial, as you say there, and you also say that predictions is a fool game, and we're going to be doing a few of those later, so that makes us fools, which is probably not news to any of the listeners / watchers of this pod regularly. It's really interesting. I've got a really, I don't know, it's a really interesting analogy that I've formed that I'm going to share with you later, which might be I've thought about it and constructed it in my head, and it might be thinking about it, it might be completely ridiculous to articulate, but we'll get there a little later on. Let's spend the first half of the show then looking at Norwich City and where they stand, because you're right, Paddy. I've partly for market research, partly for sometimes nice to hear, sometimes it's not nice, sometimes it is nice to hear opinions of people who aren't in the bubble, so to speak, who aren't plugged in all the time. And there are a lot of predictions out there, as you rightly say. I've consumed a lot of them in podcast form, in written form, mainly for, well, partly for this show, partly to maybe inform or dismiss some of what we're going to write about. Also helps kind of get a general feeling for the championship for people who perhaps cover that a bit more widely than we do. We're on it on a one club basis. It's been really interesting actually to observe those observations and predictions, because you're right, some absolutely ridiculous people have Norwich in 19th, which I'm not even willing to engage or contemplate with at this moment in time. I've seen a few have Norwich in the playoffs. I've seen a few of them in mid-table. And I think all of it, Sam, probably points to where a lot of people are with Norwich City at the moment, which is this is a really difficult team to get a grasp of and to get a feeling of what it's going to do. Because I think, and I certainly the way I sit at the moment, I can see a situation where this team and the improvements that's made over pre-season defensively adds a few more attacking elements, starts to look pretty good and manages to finish in the top six. I see the alternative of perhaps them being quite defensive, but those creative issues persisting and being mid-table. I can see actually maybe the defensive resolve not being quite as good as we thought it was, and them struggling attacking-wise and maybe not looking at too much of an improvement in terms of how the league table finished last year. So it's a really interesting club at the moment. And one podcast that I listened to described it as the club, outside of any ownership issues, as having the, and I'm going to use the V word, which people hate, having the worst vibes in the 72 because of the way the season ended and the fan base and all of that kind of wrapped in with, as we said, if that isn't a fast start, all of that's going to come to the surface again. So predictions are futile, as Paddy said, they're pointless, they don't mean anything. But for me, it's more the range that we're seeing at the moment just goes to show how difficult this Norwich City team is to pin down, to grasp, to fully understand what region of the table, and part of that is down to the championship more widely, right? And being difficult generally to really kind of nail down a 1-24. But also, I think it does speak about where Norwich City are at this moment in time. What are your thoughts on that, Sam?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's quite a strange position, I think, for Norwich to be in, where people don't know what to predict, because every year prior, for probably the last 10 or 15 years, it's been if they're in the Championship, everyone's predicting them to go up or to win the league. And if they're in the Premier League, everyone's predicting them to finish last. So it's almost the hardest season to gauge that we've seen at Norwich for a really long time, probably going back to those Daniel Farke years. And it does have a little bit of a feel of that to it, where they could be a team, as you said, that somehow works and is well coached and just gets there in the end. Or it could be a team where you look at things on the surface and you look at how things finished last season, and it wouldn't be too much of a surprise if there was a similar finish to then. There have been times this pre-season when I've looked at the sort of starting lineup graphics, and that's another thing that I think social media especially is absolutely rife with at the moment, is everyone creating their graphics for the starting 11 and the squad depth that their team has. So I've seen a number of those sort of with Norwich, and I've looked at quite a lot of starting 11s and thought, actually, that is a really, really strong starting 11. But I think where things will probably make the difference for Norwich is whether that depth can step up. We've seen numerous times over the last few seasons the impact that injury can have. Some players that you think are going to rip the league up just don't find that form. I'm thinking last season, I remember me and you sat next to each other looking at Norwich's lineup for their game against Cardiff. And I thought Milo Rashica is just far, far too good for this league and that he could have a real impact. But he played, I think, two or three games, barely did anything, and then left the club. So there are probably a few players that it's quite hard to predict what sort of season they'll have. And I think if those players can step up, then Norwich could actually have a really strong team. But the depth might be what holds them back for me. But yeah, you spoke about the sort of unpredictable nature of the Championship, the number of teams that could be in and around it, especially now some really strong clubs have been relegated from the Premier League and promoted from League One. And it is really, really hard to gauge where Norwich are going to be. I think it's one of those where normally we say after 10 games, you can sort of look at the table and start to make sense of things. But if we looked at Dean Smith's Norwich side 10 games into last season and judged them on that, they would have been promoted and they would have been probably dominating that league for a good proportion of it. So it is really difficult to gauge. David Wagner is probably, his situation is probably one that doesn't help with that. He hasn't had success for a long time, actually, but he's got really similarly specific experience of success in this league with a team that people didn't expect to do so well. And I just think there are so many intangibles that are just really, really hard to work out. One thing that keeps nagging at me, though, is just when you look at the additions they've made, as much as on paper they're good signings and they will help with that sort of experience and probably with the dressing room, I just think about some of the players they lost in the summer, and I'm not sure there's much quality that's higher than that level that they've added this summer. So that probably does make me a little bit worried, and I certainly wouldn't be committing to a prediction of Norwich finishing in the top two at this stage, but I think most fans would take top six, and I think that's certainly within the realms of possibility right now.
Yeah, let's come to you, Paddy, in terms of that expectation point, because last year those expectation levels were so high. It was for Norwich City, come what may, to finish in the top two. The goalpost shifted a little bit when Dean Smith got sacked, and maybe it became a bit more about the top six, and fans, I think, went on board with that. And I actually think there's a portion of supporters who maybe would have stomached, maybe unwillingly, but I think they would have stomached the communication from the club being along the lines of, right, you know what, that attempt didn't work. We're now going to maybe go back a little bit, try and transition things a bit. But they haven't done that. They've signed Ashley Barnes. They've signed Shane Duffy. The P word, promotion, has been used a few times. Playoffs, all of this kind of thing. So it doesn't feel like we've had almost a dampening down, a watering down of the expectations from those internally. And that certainly hasn't been shown in terms of the recruitment that they've done. It's been geared towards signings who can impact things in the here and now, with maybe the exception of Borja Sainz, who obviously can't impact things in the here and now, but is of a younger age profile than the others who have come in. Is there, and we spoke about how difficult it is at the moment to maybe pin down this Norwich City team and say, right, we believe, football believes, whatever, that they're going to finish in this part of the table. Is there a possibility that expectation, that again the club has kind of set itself, is there a possibility that becomes quite difficult to deal with, as was the case last season. I mean, what's your view in terms of where we are between expectation and what we're seeing on the pitch? Because those two things existed completely differently last season.
They did, yeah, they did. I mean, I for the reason Sam touched on, you look at the type of profile they've brought in. I mean, Ashley Barnes isn't, strike me as a shrinking violet on or off the pitch. So I don't think the burden of you must be in the promotion shake-up or playoffs or even top two, not going to bother him in the slightest. Shane Duffy as well. That's what you get. And that's what, you know, David was getting at towards the end of last season when he said we need to address the mentality. And he wasn't just talking about, for me, mentality when you face an adverse situation on a pitch and Middlesbrough away springs to mind and the house of cards collapses, essentially. You know, I think it's just in general that if you have players who have been around the block, Jack Stacey, you can put him in that category as well. Fastnacht coming from a different background, but nevertheless, you look at his age, you look at the level of football he's played at, he's used to handling expectation. You play for Young Boys in Switzerland, you're expected to be more or less winning the title every other year and competing well in Europe. So those players, it's not going to faze them. If there's either internal pressure coming from on high or an external pressure, I don't get the sense externally there's any of that, really. If you want to draw a parallel with last summer, I don't think that if you stop too many Norwich fans in the city now, they'd necessarily say their immediate thought is promotion. I think as bad as it ended last season, there'll be a hope for that, but I don't think there's an expectation. I haven't seen anything really from Norwich's fan base either on social media or face to face, and we spoke to quite a few on the tours we were out that they expect Norwich to be in the shake-up. Of course, they want them to be because it's your club, and you know, for all the trials and tribulations and what the Premier League brings, you still want them to have a good crack at getting back there again. But I think there's a marked difference in terms of the expectation levels externally. Now, internally, you know, it's very clear with those signings, it isn't about the mid to longer term. Those players that we've talked about there have been brought in to have this club in the shake-up this season, because if they don't, then and we know the situation financially, we know that this is the final year of parachute money. And of course, you know, it would appear that that's already been allocated and spent. But if it wasn't to be this summer, then you know, subject to something needing to happen in terms of the shareholder / ownership situation and an injection of capital from that area, then there will have to be some big changes, I think, this time next summer if they're still in the Championship. And that's the hard, pragmatic reality of the situation. So that brings its own pressure that they have to be competing. They have to, because if they don't, and of course, in that equation is Stuart Webb will be no longer in the building, certainly by this time next year. So, you know, huge amounts of uncertainty there, which don't help, but they're there, and they'll have to be navigated as we move through the season. But I don't get any sense either externally and internally that we are where we were last season in terms of Dean Smith boldly coming out, top two is the aim, Stuart Webber, ditto. You know, it might be implied that's the case internally, but I don't think they're setting themselves up. I mean, Wagner certainly hasn't come out and spoken in those very black and white terms. He just wants to improve on where they finished last season. And I get the feeling that's probably where Norwich fan base are right now. I think you'd be very unrealistic the way it unravelled towards the back end of last season with signings that, yeah, look potentially that they can incrementally improve you, but I don't think we're going to go from 13th to 1st with this group of players that have been brought in. That's for the birds. Anybody thinks they've signed a calibre of player individually and collectively that moves them from where they were to where, you know, where we'd hope they could get to. But by the same token, you know, as Sam rightly says, Norwich in the Championship, more often than not in the last sort of 10 attempts or so, have been geared up to at least challenge. And that wasn't the case in the first Farker season. And we saw how that went down very badly. And if he hadn't got things going the following season very early, then that story could have ended very and would have ended very differently. And it'll be the same for Wagner as well. You know, if he doesn't get off to a good start, solid start in his first 10 games off the back of what he didn't do last season with his group, then the pressure will be on, because it isn't acceptable, I don't think, if you're a Norwich fan or anybody connected with Norwich, to accept 13th in the Championship. Whatever the strength of other clubs, whatever the financial challenges they're dealing with now, it's for Norwich, 13th in the Championship is below par for me. And if you spoke to Stuart Webber or anybody inside that football club, they would agree as well. So let's work from that principle that it has to be better than 13th. Otherwise, there will be changes in the dugout and probably in the sporting director hot seat as well. And then we'll see where we go, because then we're into a very uncharted territory with the uncertainty in terms of the ownership and shareholder mix, which should hopefully, as we go through this season, there should be far more clarity provided in that area of where the club are and where they're looking to go to. But that's a long-winded way of saying no. I don't get any sense that the same levels of expectancy are around this club, this group of players, the fan base that they were if we'd been sat here recording this 12 months ago today. So that's all well and good, but ultimately, because of how poorly it ended last season, it's imperative for a lot of reasons and for a lot of individuals attached to that football club that they start in positive fashion. And that's why, you know, you said it, I've said it. The first 10 games or so, I think they're absolutely critical to the direction of travel for the people who are shaping it right now, but also the club more broadly, because, you know, another season that ends in mid-table nothingness, you know, you're talking a major reset then, I think, and it would have to be, and visually it would have to be a major reset. Not what it feels still this past summer is an acceptance and an acknowledgement, and we could all sort of pick out the elements of that, you know, Stuart Webber fronting up and doing media, Zoe Webber, you know, appearing at that fans forum, you know, all of those are positive steps forward in terms of trying to repair some of the damage and in terms of this feeling of a disconnect, rightly or wrongly. There's people inside the club don't like that phrase, but there's plenty of others outside the club who feel that was the case. So there's been positive steps, but it's going to take a hell of a lot more, I think, to feel that, you know, you've as a club emerged through a pretty turbulent period, and that the positive times and better times are ahead now.
Yeah, and ultimately you can take positive steps off the pitch, and all of those things that you said are absolutely positives in terms of addressing some of the issues that popped up last season. But then if you lose your first five games, it doesn't matter, right? So it does need to be backed up to an extent. And I mean, the way that Norwich are at the moment and the position that we find ourselves in because of the back end of last season, because it turned so toxic in the way that it did, we start the season feeling like we're kind of teetering on an edge, really, and kind of people are waiting to see what side this falls, which is really interesting. And just to round off this kind of discussion on expectation, maybe it's the first prediction of the show, I don't know, but just each of you, we all know what success constitutes for Norwich City this season. I think most people would say a top six finish, getting inside those playoffs, would be a successful season, maybe an overly successful season to some people. So let's flip that. Not to be negative, but what would constitute an underperformance for Norwich City this season in terms of, I'm speaking about range in the table, where would you look at as saying that would represent, if Norwich finished in this part of the table, an underperformance, Sam? Let me just sort of caveat that with the fact is you've obviously got underperformance, you've got about par, and then you've got probably overperformance. So you can maybe rank it like that if you want.
Well, it's difficult to really separate in terms of what I actually think would be underperformance for them or in terms of what will be perceived by fans.
Go both.
Okay. I think overperformance is getting in the playoffs, to be honest. I think people really don't think, obviously, that the target, it feels like the way that we perceived last season was the target was promotion and they failed, but they didn't finish third and then losing the playoff final. They finished 13th. And I think a club to have lost their greatest goal scorer of modern times, to have spent money on one player this summer, or one player that was signed for the senior team, to then jump seven places up the table. I know it was all the clubs were very close together at the back end of last season, and maybe it wasn't a total reflection of where they were throughout the campaign. But I think people maybe have slightly underrated the jump from where they were, what it takes to then get into the playoffs. So I think overperformance would be the playoffs. On par, I think the reality for me is, and this is why I asked the question about whether it would be perceived by fans as an overperformance or whatever, or an underperformance, is that it doesn't really matter. If they finish outside the playoffs, I think people are going to be disappointed. Whether they finish 7th or whether they finish 19th, the reality is nobody's going to be sat there delighted that Norwich finished 7th and talking about what a fantastic job David Wagner has done to get them there or to get them in the race. But based on all the factors and how difficult I think it's going to be for them. Probably par for me is somewhere between 7th and 10th. And then underperformance would be anywhere beyond that. I think you have to expect a Norwich side, especially when you look at some of the players that they've got, you have to expect them to be finishing at least in the top 10. But there are teams in this league that have done a lot of business, that have spent a lot of money. I'm looking more at the sort of parachute payment teams, obviously, of Leicester and Southampton. But not just them, that have brought in more players than Norwich, that seem to have a little bit more purpose about them and that had better squads to start off with anyway. I'm not sure we can really reasonably expect them to finish. We can't really expect them to finish in the top six. And that's not me trying to alleviate any pressure or remove any criticism, because the reality is they should have done better a year ago. They should have set themselves up better. They maybe should have appointed a better head coach when Dean Smith was brought in. There are a number of decisions that have led to the situation they're in now that shouldn't have been made, and they shouldn't be in this position now. But from this position where they are, which they can't change as things stand, I do think that finishing in the playoffs would be quite a significant overachievement. And I think you can tell that when you speak to fans. They're only really speaking about the playoffs. There isn't anybody measuring anything against automatic promotion. They're all debating whether they could make the playoffs. And I think that tells you everything you need to know, which for me is quite a massive shame when you look at the status that this club has had for decades, really. Whenever they've been in the Championship, it shouldn't be a situation where they're now looking at it hoping that they might be able to make a run to the playoffs. But just looking at that squad and looking at the factors around it, I hate to be a pessimist, but I do think it would be an overachievement to get into the playoffs.
Paddy, do you agree?
Well, I mean, I've been pretty consistent. I think 6 to 10 is my spread at the minute. So for me, yeah, 7th to 10th, like Sam, that is par for this season, as I see it, with this group of players, with all the intangibles about. It's hard to benchmark when you don't know what the other really, unless you're, you're a football anorak who's spent your 24/7 existence looking at whatever the other 22, 23 clubs have done. So anything underneath that? 6th or better, yeah, that's under par. They've overachieved in golfing terminology, but that's an overachievement. And then, yeah, anything 11th, so you're effectively saying anything bottom half, give or take a place, would definitely be considered a failure, I think, given they finished 13th. So, you know, if you can't do much better than 11th or 12th, then really what you're saying is anything we've done in the summer in the market as a club, internally, externally, collectively, hasn't worked, and then you have to maybe dig a bit deeper as to why that is the case. So yeah, it's pretty clear for me that, you know, par would be 7th to 10th. I think yourself, Connor.
Yeah, I agree. But saying that, I don't know. So let's say, for example, Norwich finish 8th. Is that going to be enough to prevent the mood turning amongst the fan base? That's the question, isn't it? I don't know. And maybe nobody else knows. Maybe it's an impossible question until the time. But so for us saying that maybe would represent par at this moment in time, this is where I think the expectation conversation is interesting, because even though, and you're right, Sam, it's very difficult at the moment, and I haven't heard anyone of a Norwich City persuasion or otherwise actually mention Norwich City in the conversation for top two. And I think we can all understand why that is the case, and so can fans. But there is conversations about, oh, is this team good enough to get in the playoffs? But to people, it kind of feels like it should be. I think that's probably fair, which is really interesting. So again, I don't know if par is going to be enough, is my point. And I guess only time will dictate that. I did want to use a really abstract analogy that I've been forming in my head over the last few days, and I'll finish this and you'll even call me absolutely mental, or you'll go, oh, okay, yeah, I can kind of see where he's coming from. So hopefully it's the latter. This is how I spend my thoughts on when I'm walking my dog around Norwich. I'm going to be the first person as well to compare Norwich City to a ham sandwich, so just bear with it. But where I see Norwich City as at the moment, it's a little bit like, you know, you walk into a shop, pick a shop of choice, you're going to get a sandwich, and you open the fridge doors and there's a selection of sandwiches there. And maybe in, right in front of you, you've got the trusted ham sandwich. You know, it's dependable. It's reliable. It's probably not going to get you in trouble. Doesn't excite that much. If you're vegetarian, you can pick another filling. Or if you don't like ham, you can pick another filling. But it doesn't excite much. But, you know, if over the period of time between buying the ham sandwich and eating the ham sandwich, you get various different elements to it, bit of cheese, bit of chutney, you add some bits to it, suddenly the cheese the ham sandwich looks much more impressive. And I guess another point of that is, I don't know, if you have a ham sandwich and you put it alongside a load of other sandwiches, and actually, even though the flavors of those sandwiches look really, really good, they actually don't go together and they don't mix in quite the way they did, then suddenly the ham sandwich is being bolstered up the rankings, and suddenly that dependable ham sandwich that doesn't excite, that is quite sturdy, that is dependable, that won't get you in trouble, can suddenly look pretty effective. That's kind of where I feel Norwich are at the moment. They don't particularly excite, and I think we're kind of getting that from maybe the range of predictions that we're seeing. But if that defensive structure that has existed throughout pre-season continues, then you can kind of see them just being relatively steady. And we know what the Championship is like. It can be mad. It can have twists and turns. Clubs can sack managers here, there and everywhere. Events can change. Clubs can underperform. We see it all the time. Norwich are a prime example. Last year, one of the promoted teams suddenly doesn't do as well as quite as everyone thinks they did. Russell Martin doesn't click at Southampton. Enzo Maresca at Leicester isn't quite the Pep Guardiola disciple that maybe some people think he is. And suddenly that solid, dependable team gets you in and around the top six. So that's why my analogy is I'm comparing Norwich City to the trusted ham sandwich. I don't know if that makes any kind of sense, but hopefully you can kind of see my thinking there. I don't know if any of you boys have anything to say off the back of that, but yeah. Does that make sense?
I think it makes sense. Yeah. I think probably that would also make sense in a transfer situation. I think if you look at the options they've gone for, I think Ashley Barnes and Jack Stacey and Shane Duffy probably go straight in the ham sandwich category. But I do sort of agree with you, and I think maybe that's the best way for Norwich going forward. It's difficult to carry on the sandwich analogy, but I think this is how they've been trying to do things actually since that first sort of Premier League failure, was probably to build that sturdy base before they then added those exciting elements. But you know, I am one that likes excitement, so hopefully they can add a little bit of chutney and cheese in the next few months.
Paddy?
Well, I mean, you're forgetting that they have added Swiss cheese in Fastnacht.
Ah, there you go.
Spanish chorizo, which is very tasty, tangy meat feast in Borja Sainz. So what we're talking about is they've got the basic ingredients of the sandwiches, but they might be able to sprinkle on with fillings that could just elevate that sandwich into the realms of a playoff contending sandwich, maybe.
Yeah. 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 I think I look at other teams at this moment and I think, you know, you've probably got more flavors that would excite me, but I'm not sure if all of those flavors will work at the same time in the conditions that they're in, within the bread that they're in, if you want to extend the tired analogy. But yeah, that's kind of where I feel that Norwich are. And equally, I think, you know, the structure that they have at the moment, the way they're lining up at the moment, from what we've seen in pre-season, David Wagner said there's been such an emphasis on the defensive elements. I think we've got some answers as to what they're going to try and do at Carrow Road against Olympiacos, to be fair. And I think some of those looked positive in terms of trying to get teams to press them and trying to unpick that. And we've seen them use the sort of long diagonal ball to very advanced wing backs at points. But by the same token, and again, the flip side of that is they've got alternatives, because if teams don't press them, then you've got Josh Sargent, Ashley Barnes, and teams are going to have to say, okay, yeah, we fancy ourselves airily against Ashley Barnes, Josh Sargent over 75 minutes. So I am... That's kind of where I am. And I think that's where I've been throughout pre-season. Am I particularly excited by this Norwich City team in the same way as I was maybe ahead of the 2021 season when we were, you know, when we were, you know, really excited to see Emi Buendia and Temu Puki and Todd Cantwell and Kieran Dowell. And we were talking about all this flair and excitement and attacking intent, even though they did have a very good defensive record in that season. I don't think anyone is there. But at the same token, I think what we might see is a side that maybe doesn't concede too many, maybe even doesn't score many. But if you could, if you don't concede many by virtue of that, then you don't necessarily need to score any. So it might take a little bit of an emphasis of it. So that's kind of where I am. I'm not expecting a particularly exciting team, which again, if you're going to play that way, you kind of have to win, right, Pad? Because it becomes very difficult then to play in a style, as Dean Smith found, that maybe doesn't excite supporters if you don't, if you don't back it up with results, I guess.
Well, I mean, I'll just go back to, you know, Luton. I mean, anybody who saw Luton last season, they were very functional, certainly not pleasing on the eye, but mightily effective. And now they're preparing for a season in the Premier League. So maybe that's one for fans. Would you take a arm wrestling type of style of football if it got you to the Premier League? Or do you want to be entertained and have the panache? And maybe it falls short in terms of the end goal. I don't know. I mean, that's a bit of a theoretical debate. You'd ideally want both, wouldn't you? And, you know, Peak Farker, dare I mention his name, now he's in West Yorkshire, he combined the both in the best elements of those two title-winning sides. And there's an element that fans have been, and media, for that matter, were a little bit spoiled and using that as a benchmark. But I don't necessarily think that is the benchmark, really. I think, you know, I would be less keen to portray it as black and white. It's either going to be one thing or the other with a David Wagner template, because I don't think that is the case. I think there was one glorious, albeit fleeting, moment on Saturday against Olympiacos where they went pro Evo football style, you know, two or three passes minimum from back to front, you know, really good angles, very quick, very incisive, and they got themselves into the final third. And the reason that stands out in my memory is because the rest of the game was probably a bit more painted by numbers. And as you say, the more functional elements where you move through the thirds. But that is there. That is in this group. You've got to play like Gabby Zara, a player like Marcelino Nunes. Don't for a minute tell me that they can't play that style of football, more polished. But I think everything will be within the template of what Wagner wants in terms of the structure with and without the ball. But I think particularly if you get off to a good start, you get a bit of momentum, a bit of confidence, you get the results, you get the fans behind you. I think you can add layers of complexity and verve and panache within, you know, the functional template. It's very difficult to add that if you don't get off to a good start and the pressure's on and they need a result from somewhere, then I think it will regress to a more functional style of football. But again, at the risk of labouring this point, if they get off to a positive start, I think there will be a degree of evolution and a degree of maturity come into the style of play that he's trying to bring. Because I go back to that Huddersfield team that he got out of the Championship and into the Premier League, and they could play football. They kept the Car Road memorably that evening in December, and it was an excellent brand of football. Fast, attacking, aggressive, very good in transition, and basically taught Norwich a bit of a lesson at that stage where Norwich were going the other way under Alex Neil. So, you know, David Wagner has got that in him and in his coaching style, but I think where he finds himself now, and it's clear, you know, what he's done in pre-season is to make them very robust out of possession. And that's in terms of the individuals, but also the style. That 4-4-2 block, Sargent and Barnes ostensibly leading the press. And then you look at, you know, how overworked was Gunnar Krull. Very, very little amounts of work for them during these pre-season. You know, very bar Demi Unuli switching off at Alkmaar that day, that they didn't concede a goal from Kingsland onwards. So you can see where he's focused on and what they're striving to build from. And I think it is fair to assess that at the minute we're not seeing maybe enough in the final third to give you any real confidence that it's going to be anything other than, at the outset at least, quite a stodgy style of football you're going to be watching from a Norwich team. But I don't think that's set in stone. I think if they get the results on the board and the points on the board, then you will start to see a little bit more of a refinement to Norwich's attacking play. And of course, you know, hopefully by October, if not a little bit sooner, we'll be able to drop Science into the equation. And he feels like quite an exciting addition in terms of what they could end up being in the final third of the pitch. So I would reserve judgment on what they'll try and do or what they'll look like with the ball until we get a little bit further into the season, I think.
It's the ham sandwich, isn't it? You start with a ham sandwich and eventually you can take the bread out, you can add some ciabatta, you can toast it, you can add some few more ingredients and you've got a completely different product. So I'm going to keep labouring that, by the way, for the rest of the podcast. which probably lends us nicely to the second part of the pod and doing some Norwich City predictions, which, as Paddy has said, they're all futile anyway. So, you know, you can choose if this is a complete waste of time or not. And then we'll branch it out to some Championship ones as well. But I'm going to start purely with Norwich City related ones, which, you know, from our perspective, I guess, are semi, well, again, depends on who you're asking, really, but they're kind of educated predictions, I'd like to think or hope. So we're going to do the prediction. I haven't actually briefed the boys on this, but I'll brief them now, so they've got a little bit of time to think. So we're going to go top scorer. Who's going to be Norwich City's top scorer? Then I'm going to ask for a surprise package, maybe a player who performs a little bit better than people are speaking about at the moment. Who's going to end up as player of the season? That we're then going to have a curveball prediction. So that could be, I don't know, a young player coming to the fore that nobody expects. It could be, I don't know, as someone has said, Shane Duffy scoring 5 to 10 goals, which is a massive curveball, or could be something else. And then finally, we'll end with where Norwich City are going to finish in the Championship table. And then we're going to speak about the Championship a bit more widely. Of course, you can send us in your predictions as well. We've put all of this post out on social media, so you can reply on there. We've already had some good ones, so why give the boys some time to think? I'll read a couple of them. Chris Holmes, for example, has said Norwich will finish in the playoffs if they get injury luck or 13th after being forced to play Jakob Sorensen at centre back when injuries hit. He's gone for Ashley Barnes as top goal scorer. His surprise package is an interesting one. Actually, it's not Norwich related. Southampton to struggle adapting to Russell Martin. He gets, unfortunately, he's added, sacked by Christmas. Sarah as player of the season. And then the Duffy one was his curveball, which is that he'll get 5 to 10 goals. William has gone a bit more positive. He says Norwich will finish 5th and win the playoffs. Sargent will be the top scorer. Shane Duffy as the surprise package. Player of the season, Sargent or Sarah. And the curveball being Leicester won't get promoted. Finley's gone for 7th. Lose out on the playoffs on the last day of the season. Sargent as top goal scorer. Nunez as the surprise package. Sarah as player of the season. And finish on a negative goal difference as the curveball. And Chris, I'll read, finally one. Chris Allen said 6th. And he's gone the opposite. Win on the final day to move into the playoffs. Sargent as is that top goal scorer? Yeah. The surprise package being Shemiswaf Boheta, Jack Stacey, top assist, and his curveball is that Ashley Barnes doesn't get a ban all season, which I think you get good odds on at this moment in time. So Sam, let's start with you. What we're going to do, we're going to go through them individually, so you can just say the name, you can expand a bit, you can go however in depth you want, bearing in mind we've got about 20 minutes of the show left, so don't overrun too much. But let's start top goal scorer. Who is going to have the most goals for Norwich City? And I'm going to pin you down to an amount as well.
Josh Sargent. I think the time up front is going to be mainly shared between him and Barnes. And as much as I've actually liked Barnes in a Norwich shirt more than I expected to be fair, I don't think he's really characteristically a goal scorer. And I think if one of those two is scoring the most goals, it's going to be Sargent. And I'm going to be quite optimistic, actually. I'm not sure he's technically the best player, but I think he knows where to go. And he has got some good attributes for the Championship. So I'm going to say he scores 17 goals, which I think would be I think most Norwich fans would be quite pleased with that. I'm sure he would be pleased with that. Got 13 last season. And I think you spoke to him the other day and he said that he's looking forward to the burden of being the main goal scorer. Now he's got the number 9 shirt as well. So, yeah, a lot of pressure on him, but he seems to be enjoying it so far. And I do think at this level, although I'm not sure it will translate to top level goals if and when he gets back there, I think at this level he can score a good number of goals. So yeah, Josh Sargent.
Do you know what struck me when I spoke to him the other day? I mean, he's a quite a big lad anyway, muscular, physical, but he looks lean at the moment. It's the best word that I can use. Just looks physically in a better shape. And actually, he said that a lot of the players have come back. When they came back to pre-season, they were recording better physical numbers than they were when they left last season, which I think maybe is a bit of an interesting insight. Paddy, let's throw it over to you. Who is going to be Norwich City's top goal scorer in the 23-24 campaign? And how many are they going to score?
Well, I'm not going to... I mean, Sam's basically mapped it all out there. It's Josh Sargent, 18. End of.
18?
Yep.
Nice.
Look, he got 13 last season, and with respect, post-World Cup, I mean, he got one at West Brom in the penultimate away game, well, the final away game, penultimate game. But, I mean, he went weeks and weeks and months without troubling the scorer. So if you end up with 13 after that season, then he just needs to stay a bit more consistent. And yeah, I could see it. And free of injury, obviously.
Sergeant 15 for me. Sam, surprise package. You can interpret this in however way you like. You can interpret it as a player, as a team. Doesn't even have to be Norwich. Who's going to be your surprise package for 23-24?
I think, Dimi, you knew this.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, I think I actually was thinking about that, and I thought that is a decent. That's quite a surprise, actually. And I just really think a lot of people have lost track of how important technicality still is and technical ability in this Norwich team. I know they've lacked physicality for a number of years. I know they've lacked leadership, but on the ball, although there are defensive issues, on the ball, he's still, I would say, one of the most gifted players that Norwich have. And I think in this system under Wagner, in a team that hopefully isn't just losing all momentum and in a really bad rut, playing in a negative atmosphere every week, I think, as he did at the start of Wagner's tenure, when both him and Aarons really thrived, I can see Yiannoulis playing a big role if he's given the chance. Now he's got a little bit more solidity with Shane Duffy, who's impressed at the back as well. Yeah, I'm a really big fan, and I hope that he can finally use his attributes, because I think he did in that first, 6 months in a Norwich shirt, and since then we haven't really seen the player that he can be. But if he can hit top form, especially given where it looks like the creativity is going to come from under David Wagner, I think he can be a really massive player for Norwich.
Paddy Davitt, let's have your surprise package.
Surprise package. Well, even prior to asking him the other day, I kind of was where David Wagner's seemingly with John Rowe, that if that lad can stay fit and you can already see him, he is beginning to mature, which is the phrase David used, and use his head as well as his physical attributes. But he does have that explosiveness, and it was noticeable. I know it was pre-season, and I know it was, you know, half full, but Carrow Road, every time he got the ball on Saturday attacking the Barclay, there was a visible uplift in the noise and the excitement, like a palpable sense something was about to happen. Now, put that mix in when there's 25,000 there and you've got Ipswich in town and they're on the back foot and Johnny Rose, you know, going for the jugular. I mean, it evokes, and I'm not for a minute trying to, you know, put him in the same bracket because he's got many miles to travel, but, you know, players who have got Norwich fans off their seats, Huckabee, Edie, Buendia at his best, you know, those off the cuff, they're not quite sure what they're going to deliver themselves, but and that they're big shoes for him to fill. But I just think I look at the wide areas, and we can't make a judgment on science because we haven't seen him, unfortunately, and we haven't seen enough of Fastnacht yet. But in a Wagner setup, wide areas is absolutely pivotal. It's one of the pillars of what he's trying to do in and out of possession. And in John Rowe, he looks to have the raw material. Again, needs to stay fit because that's where his campaign last season, after a breakout in getting his Premier League debut the season before, didn't happen for him. But he can be a catalyst for change, no doubt about it. And you just don't know. He's the sort of player, if he catches and he goes, it could be multiple goals and multiple assists. Because I think there is clearly, within a David Wagner side, a player there who could really add an extra dimension. So fingers crossed he stays clear of injury and keeps listening to the right people, keeps working hard, because he's got something about him. And I think in a wide areas of the pitch where we're not sure really where we're going now at the minute with David Wagner as a team, I think he could really, and there's an opportunity for him and there's a window for him. And I think it going into Saturday's game, I think it's him and Hernandez. I think Fastnacht will obviously play on the right-hand side, but it seems to be a toss-up. And I'd like David personally to be quite bold and quite brave and go John Rowe.
I was going to say John Rowe, so I'll say a different one now. I'm going to go for two. I'm going to go for a centre-back pairing of Ben Gibson and Shane Duffy to look pretty good throughout the season is what I'm going to go for. Injury permitting, stroke, Omar Bamadeli being sold and someone else coming in permitting. But that's my surprise package, I think, seeing as you took my first one of John Rowe emerging. Player of the season. Paddy, I'm going to come to you first to mix it up. Who is, come May, going to be holding that Barry Butler Memorial Trophy?
He's going to be retaining the trophy, and it's going to be Gabby Zara. And if Norwich haven't got themselves out of the Championship, it'll be his, when he does lift that trophy, it'll be his final performance in a Norwich shirt prior to him sealing a big money move to the Premier League.
Sam?
Yeah, I'm going to have to be boring and agree, unfortunately, with pretty much everything Paddy said there. I think if they don't end up getting that sort of season out of him, then David Wagner and the players around him have had a bit of a shocker, really, because he is, I would say, head and shoulders above the rest of that Norwich squad at the moment. And I hope, given actually looking at the sort of season he had last season, maybe he's going to have a, and this is a very, very high bar, so he might not reach quite this level, but it feels like the sort of thing where he could go from Emi Buendia's 2018-19 campaign, where I think he scored 8 goals and got 12 assists, to the 2020-21 campaign, where I think it was 32 goal contributions, and he really just carried Norwich to that title. So hopefully for Norwich, he can really come to the fore in that sort of way. But yeah, after the season he had coming straight from South America last season, I think after a year of adapting, now he's got his dogs with him as well, I think he's going to have an absolutely fantastic season.
I did consider him for a top goal scorer. Didn't quite go for it. I think if the question would have been top goal scoring contributions, I think he'd have topped it. But yeah, not quite. But yeah, I agree. It will be Sarah, I think. And then I'll add a couple of other players to the conversation. I can see Shane Duffy, if he keeps fit, being involved in that conversation. I've got a feeling that he's going to be a player that Norwich City fans like. And Jack Stacey, if he can continue his pre-season form, I think he's going to be one to watch as well. Let's have curveball predictions then. Like I say, Pad, I'll open this up. It can be anything Norwich related. It can be championship related. It can be football related, if you like. What is your curveball prediction for the new season?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we're getting into crystal ball gazing here, aren't we? Farker to be gone by Christmas. There you go. Let's throw that one out there. Because if he doesn't have leads in and around, I mean, we're talking about expectation earlier in the pod. Lord alive, I know Leeds are coming down with a lot of issues off the park, a lot of change as well. Financially, they don't look to have the wherewithal to do a Leicester, maybe even a Southampton, if they shift one or two of their big, highly rated players, Livramento and Ward-Prowse come to mind. But they still, if you're Leeds, you still expect, given his last two times in this league, been lifting trophies himself, if they're not in the conversation, seriously, and I would say even for automatic by Christmas, that fan base, very difficult to see him surviving onto the rest of the end of the season. So Farker gone by Christmas.
Samuel Seaman?
I'm going to stick with that theme of the relegated sides and their managers, because I actually find it really interesting. All three of them have gone for sort of project managers by the looks of things. Daniel Farker, Russell Martin, obviously we know it's going to take a lot of time to adapt to their styles of play. And it looks like the same with Maresca at Leicester. So I think it's highly probable at least one of those goes quite badly wrong. And Paddy's already stolen Leeds. So I'll keep it Norwich related and go for Southampton. Although I think they might do okay. But I think one of Southampton and Leicester won't do quite as well as everybody thinks they will. And those projects won't quite pan out very well, because you know the chances of all three being promoted I think aren't especially high, especially given the managers they've gone for. So yeah, sorry, I've rode in behind with quite a similar prediction, but I couldn't go for Farker, so let's go for Martin or Maresca.
I'm going to go for a Norwich City related one, and then I'll go for a championship one, but I might whisper that one. The Norwich City one is Kellen Fisher to be a Norwich City frontliner come the end of the season, but
I was gonna do that. At left back. Have you had a bang on the head?
At left back. Just a feeling. If he can play left back anyway. I've not seen him at left back, but yeah, that's what I will go for. And then the championship one is sadly Ipswich Town doing really quite well. As in maybe challenging top two quite well. But I'll whisper that one quite quietly, which probably lends us on nicely to our championship predictions, where I'm not going to put them in the top two. So that leans on nicely. We're going to go top six, bottom three. And then we'll obviously finish the show with where Norwich City are going to finish in the table, which, you know, might be quite telling if neither of you think they're going to finish in the top six or in the bottom three. Who wants to go first? Sam, you look like a man who wants to go first. Let's start with your championship bottom three. Who is going to get relegated from the division this season?
I've been thinking about it. It's a difficult one. Rotherham, I feel for them, because just every year that they're in the championship, everyone's going to predict that they go down. But I'm going to
say I was looking at the table, and it's quite tough because for me there's a couple of teams that I think are really in trouble, and then there's kind of a group of teams, and actually, like, you think Rotherham did good business in January, and it just kind of feels like they end up being put in there. So yeah. I feel for them a little bit, but yeah. I get your thinking.
QPR, I think I was trying to avoid. It's a big club, and I kind of like them, and it's a short trip for us, so I was trying to avoid it. But they looked really, really, really poor after McBeal left them, and they haven't done a lot of business this summer. So. Or a lot of good business, at least. So I've got them. And then I don't know if this is a bit of a surprise, but I think Swansea. I think Russell Martin did a fantastic job with them. Maybe this could have been my curveball prediction, but Russell Martin did a fantastic job with them. The manager they brought in, is it Michael Duff? His name escapes. Yeah, Michael Duff. Very different style of play, very different track record at Barnsley. And they've lost a few of those players that were really key last season, so I think they could well be in trouble, Swansea.
Paddy, let's have your bottom three.
QPR definitely, doesn't look good there, does it? And Cardiff and Sheffield Wednesday. You want? I mean, people might point to potentially instability around Norwich City and internally, but the soap opera that's unfolded there post Darren Moore is off the dial. So I don't see, with that backdrop, big club though they are, how they can possibly go into this season with any stability. And you know, they've been in and around it. Obviously, only came up last season, so they know what it's like to be at the wrong end of this division. So, yeah. And those two, and Cardiff, I've kind of just thrown them in, really. Yeah. Because, again, you know, they seemingly are a club who kind of are, you know, lost their way a little bit. And there's a few in the Championship, really, looking at it from afar. But, you know, all three, really, have been in the Premier League. So, you know, it can turn, it can go the other way. But it just feels like, a little bit like with Reading, that you feel that those clubs are on a bit of a downward cycle at the minute.
I've probably got a mixture of both of yours. So I've gone for QPR, who I think will finish bottom. They seem banging in trouble. I've gone for Rotherham, sadly, and then I've gone for who's the other teams you said, Pad? You said Cardiff, and who was the other team you said?
Sheffield Wednesday
is who else I've gone for. I should have written these down. With honourable mentions, I think Huddersfield are an interesting one, because even though they've got the Championship messiah himself, Neil Warnock, he's quite interesting, because it just feels from a running start, maybe he might not have quite the same impact. And if they're hovering around, I don't know, 14th, 15th, anywhere between about 14th and 20th in October, is he going to be that interested? I don't know. And then it could be interesting. So they're ones that I'd throw into the conversation, as well as Cardiff as well, who are just a soap opera as well at the best of times. Top six then. Paddy, do you want to kick us off with your Championship top six? I expect Coventry to be in here.
No. Is this in order, Connor? Do you want them 1 to 6?
Yes, please. Well, let's go 6 to 1. Let's build up the tension a bit.
Well, I mean, I said Norwich 6 to 10 all along, so I'm going to be positive because it's the first one looking ahead to the new season. So Norwich 6th. I'm working back now from where I've got the Sunderland. Mm-hmm. 5th. Middlesbrough 3rd. I'm going to come back to 4th. Middlesbrough 3rd. West Brom, I think. I'm a big fan of Corberan. I think he could get them going. Club, again, who've liked Norwich yo-yoed between the two. I know they didn't have the best of seasons, but if he can get them going with the style of play he likes to play and the right players to fit the system, I think they could easily have a good season. And then Leicester, obviously, to do the business and lift the title, which is a fairly predictable one, I think, for most people who are looking at these things at the minute. 4th, I'm going to... Now, I did throw in the curveball that I thought Farker could be gone, but if he stays and he gets things going, then, you know, you'd have to think Leeds will be finishing in the top six, because it is, you know, it's going to be one thing or the other. I don't think they'll finish mid-table with him. He'll either be gone and it'll be somebody else's worry, or he will get them going, but maybe not from the sort of start they're coming from. quite good enough for the top two. So I'm going to go Norwich, Sunderland, Leeds, Borough, West Brom, and champions Leicester.
Sam, let's have your top six.
I've got Middlesbrough sixth. It's really, really good team, but I think they've got it in them to maybe bottle it at times. So I'm not sure they'll get in the top two. Sunderland as well, I think, have had a really, really good transfer window. West Brom fourth. Same as Paddy, really. I'm a big Carlos Corberan fan, and I think they've done some very good business as well. Then third, I thought I'm going to take a chance with third because the championship is so unpredictable. May as well just lob a team in there that's a little bit of a wild card. So I've got Millwall third. I think they came very close. Because he got a laughing. But I think they came very close to the playoffs last season. And I think those sorts of teams are sometimes the ones that take off. Not sure they would get promoted, but I can see them getting into the playoffs. Then I've got Southampton second and Leicester first. So my top two are pretty boring. But Leeds nowhere in there for me. I think looking at their squad and the window they've had, it feels like they remembered they had a season of football to play about 2 weeks ago. So I think they'll probably get off to a slow start. And I'm not sure Farker is the sort of coach, as we've seen across his career, that gets things going immediately. So, I haven't got them in there.
Oh, we're quite split on Leeds. That's interesting. I'll bring you my top six. Sixth place, Ipswich Town, which we'll gloss over. Middlesbrough, fifth. I've gone Leicester in fourth. Not convinced as maybe everyone else is. Just not convinced by their recruitment, particularly. Feels like name-led recruitment. And I think it's big and bold at the moment to go for Maresca and put all your eggs in that particular basket. So that's why I'm going with them. But with the potential that obviously if that goes in the way that we expect it goes, they could finish top quite comfortably. I've gone for Sunderland third, Southampton second. I've gone Leeds to win the league. Just because I see similarities between Burnley and Leeds, where Burnley were last year, where, I don't know, everyone felt they were in a little bit of turmoil before the season started, and they'd lost Sean Dyche, and they had a lot of kind of young players, and everyone felt they were a little bit in crisis and not particularly ready for the start of the season. Then they played and looked pretty good. And I think that might be the same with Leeds, who have some really good young players. So that is the top six that I've gone for. Interestingly, no Norwich. So I mean, the final question really was going to be predictions on Norwich. We know Paddy's, he's gone for sixth. Do you want to lock that in, Pad? You don't want to change that?
Well, I mean, you know, as I say, it's a fool's game, really. anywhere between sixth and tenth, I've just undermined the last 20 minutes of this podcast, but let's be honest, it is. So, I mean, if Norwich were to finish sixth to tenth, I wouldn't be overly surprised. But in the interests of an uplifting, looking ahead, aspirational podcast, then I'm going to go sixth rather than tenth.
Good. Sam?
So it is locked in, Connor, to answer your question.
It's locked in. We don't have any fancy like noise graphic for that like we're doing TV. Sam, where are you locking Norwich City in?
Oh, it's really hard. I'm really tempted to be super harsh. I think earlier in the summer I said 15th. But I don't think they'll be quite that bad. But they're not going to, for me, get especially close to challenging playoffs. So I'm going to say 10th. What about you, Connor?
I am going to go 9th, I think. So we've all got them in the 6 to 10 range, which I think actually is a lot higher than perhaps the external people have phrased them like they're some sort of different entity that we don't speak to and look down upon. Go on, Pad.
No, just edging forward to
where. Oh, right. I thought you wanted to say something. That probably signs us off nicely. You've heard our predictions, which, you know, as Paddy says, are all pointless anyway. It doesn't matter. We'll find out obviously more when the championship season unfolds. We'd of course like to hear yours as well, so get in touch with us and let us know. Also any interesting analogies that you have on Norwich City would be good. If anyone can beat a ham sandwich, then fair play to you. Of course, plenty more content, coverage, analysis over at pinken.com. We'll be continuing these podcasts across the 46 game plus cup game season. And we will be at Carrow Road on Saturday for the league opener against Hull, which I'm very excited for the start of the new season. Let's hope it's a positive one for all of those involved, particularly around Norwich City, and the music is a little bit different. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for watching. And we will see you again very, very soon. We'll obviously be recording another podcast on Sunday. So hopefully we're just talking about how great, or maybe how low, we feel we've ranked Norwich City after they beat Hull 5-0. Thanks for listening.